Welcome to this meeting of the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations. Particular word of welcome to the chief from the National Empowerment Fund. I wanted to say to the leaders from the National Empowerment Fund, we appreciate the time that you've made to engage with us today. Thank you very much for that. We do have apologies, and I'll ask our secretary to just deal with it.
Good morning, everyone. We, as a committee, have received so far two written apologies. The first apology is for Honorable Ntebe, who was committed in the and the second apology is for Ms. Honorable Van Lingen, who is also an alternative member on the Appropriation Committee, a member today of the budget, so they are in the lock-up meeting. Thank you. And the rest of the members, I just confirmed they are coming.
If they're not here, they are. You can't be coming when you're not here. Can I request just the indulgence of the team from the NEF? It's just the normal procedure is that we look at the minutes of our last meeting. We'll just adopt that and hand over to you after that. I am going to request you to give us an indication of how much time your presentation would take, just so that we orient ourselves on that. Members, you have received the minutes via email. Am I correct? So we don't need to go through them in the meeting. Can I ask whether there are any amendments that needs to be made to that minute? It's the minute of the 18th of February. Honorable, good morning, Honorable Mofena. Honorable Faber, where are you?
Yes, this is the chair. I seem to be the only one who was present at that meeting. Who was present today?
You are right. That's why I was looking. No, Honorable Mofena was there. Honorable Mofena, you were in the last meeting. Yes, you were. Can we?
I'm sorry that I'm late. My telecom took a little bit longer, but better late than never.
We're glad to hear. Let's leave the adoption then until Honorable Faber is here. Can I then immediately request the NEFT, National Empowerment Fund? You will, Honorable CEO, can we ask you to introduce your team to the group and before you kick off to give us an indication how much time you would need, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity. But maybe I will start my presentation by just thanking the committee for the privilege to appear before one of the key decision-making committees in our country's quest for inclusive growth. And this occasion, Honorable Chair, is important for the NEF because it is the first time since our country's fourth democratic election that we are appearing today before the committee. You are asking me about how much time do we need. I'm tempted to say the whole day. If you can indulge us, because we believe that we're dealing with a very important and key objectives of government. I think the presentation will take about an hour, but we are here at the committee's disposal to spend as much time as you want with us this morning. So allow me at the outset to introduce my colleagues who will be sharing this presentation with me. I have Mr. Tlakalani Mulepo, who is our divisional executive for SME and Rural Development. He's an engineer by profession, and when I get to my presentation, you'll understand the rationale for employing engineers at the NEF. I have our general counsel, Mr. Wabantu Daimani, who's an admitted attorney who's responsible for all our legal agreements, post-investment, turnarounds, workouts, and restructuring units of the NEF. Then I have Ms. Zamaka Nile, who is a chartered accountant who has asked the NEF Umnotho Fund. I will talk about that, the role of Umnotho Fund, a bit later. And then I have the head of marketing and communications, Mwemise Mutsipe. He's our marketing and communications senior manager. So sometimes he's based, he goes to all the provinces where the NEF has a presence, so which is why he's here today. And my name is Kilisiwe Mteta, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Empowerment Fund. The spoke chair of our presentation this morning is quite comprehensive because this is our maiden report to this very important committee. So as we're preparing the presentation, we're thinking, what do we add and what do we discuss? It became very difficult because we have never really interacted with the committee in the previous year. So the scope will cover the following areas. It will look at the mandate of the NEF. It will look at how the NEF has responded to the call for growing black industrialists in the economy. We'll speak about the NEF's provincial dynamics and about how some of the committee members can assist the NEF in terms of achieving our objectives in the provinces. We'll talk about our investment philosophy. We'll also talk about the administrative and bureaucratic challenges which we, along our investees, face in dealing with government, especially in the provincial governments and departments, among others. We have also included appendices on a range of pertinent matters about the NEF and some of our investees, just to give the committee a feel of the types of investments that the NEF has been doing over the last 9 years. Chair, just going back to the basics, as a creature of statute, the NEF was created through the NEF Act number 105 of 1998 and was eventually capitalized by government in 2004, which is when the operations of the NEF began, but in essence, the operations started in 2005. The NEF is the only development financing institution that is exclusively mandated to grow broad-based black economic empowerment in the South African economy, and we do this through the provision of financial and non-financial support to black-empowered businesses, as well as by promoting a culture of savings and investments amongst our black people. Our uncompromising commitment to integrity and good corporate governance is best expressed through our pledge to the people. All members of staff, management and trustees at the NEF have signed this pledge, Honorable Chair, which reads as follows, and I quote, "As a member of the NEF family, I hereby solemnly pledge to remain faithful to the values and ethos of the NEF because as an instrument in the quest for inclusive growth, I recognize that the economic dreams and aspirations of black people depend on my willingness to serve with truth in my heart and in taking the hopes of black economic freedom to greater heights and growth itself to the skies. I hereby undertake that as a patriot, I will perform my call to duty with integrity and honor, with empathy and dedication to excellence, inspired by the vision of a growing and inclusive economy. This is my oath, my vocation, and my contract with the nation, close quote. Chair, these are just not words, it's a lot of words, but when you walk to the NEF offices, if you don't get a feel of what I'm talking about here, it's expressed in different ways. It's the professionalism, it's the excellence, it's the quality of the types of skills that we get on board. I just mentioned here that, you know, we have one engineer who's part of this delegation today. I have a lot of engineers who are working for us, and people would think, wow, how did the NEF manage to attract these types of skills? I have young CAs, I have young lawyers. So when you walk into our offices, and this is an invitation to the community to actually maybe organize a visit to our premises when you get an opportunity to do that. So what is clear to us, honorable members, is that the mandate of the NEF remains valid because, as you know, black people in South Africa only control less than 5% of the national economy. That is if we were to use the JSE's market capitalization as a proxy. So we came up with the BEE policies as early as 1999, but it's how many years later? It's 15 years later. If I were to look at what is listed on the JSE, because you can't actually measure your unlisted portfolios, black people in South Africa still control less than 5% of the GDP of the South African economy. So I wanted to stress this, Chair, because what it says is that we still have a very long way to go. We have done quite a bit. The NEF has at its disposal about 6 billion rand. When we looked at how much needed to be in black hands by 2015, when we came up with the different sector-specific charters, we're saying 26% of the GDP of the South African economy should be in black hands by 2015. So we're still sitting at less than 5%. By the way, the Brazilian tax and when you said the 26% equated to how much?
To 2.6 trillion.
Yes, 2.6 trillion is what needs to be at least sitting in black hands. So we've done about 5% of that. Just some of the key performance milestones in discharging this mandate. Honorable members, the NEF has achieved the following. The NEF has benefited over 2,000 black entrepreneurs through approval of 600 transactions worth close to 6 billion for black empowered businesses across the country. And through over 4 billion of this is capital that has been dispersed directly into the economy. The other 2 billion will relate to what we call approvals, since the transactions have been approved, but we have not finalized all the legal agreements that would enable us to release the funds, but the transactions have been approved. Three, we're also certain that the honorable members of the select committee share our sense of fulfillment that for 9 years running, the NES has secured unqualified external audit opinions. Four, and that to date, through its funding milestone, the NES has supported in excess of 80,000 decent jobs countrywide. Five, in terms of the task of crafting black industrialists, we can point to 20 strategic and industrial projects that are worth 30 billion rand with the potential to support a further 80,000 jobs. Six, the Assong Share Scheme remains one of the most seminal public share offers in our country, having brought over 12 million MTN shares into the hands of 87,000 black investors, about half of whom were women. And Honorable Chair, through your engagements with your colleagues at different levels, we have heard from the grapevine that the South African government is actually planning to dispose a certain number of their so-called non-core assets. I think I heard that from the Minister of Finance. So they will be disposing of some of those non-core assets that are sitting in different asset classes all over the country. So our plea to the government is to say, is there any effort able to, remember that the share that we sold to 87,000 black investors was equivalent to about 1.5% of our shareholding in MTN, 1.5% of our shareholding in MTN went to about 87,000 beneficiaries. And we raised about 1.5 billion from that share offer. So if the government were to give us a small portion of the non-core assets, would be ready, because we have developed the track record, we have the infrastructure that is in place, which will then enable the NAF to roll those shares in to the general public if they are given to us. When Sasol did their retail offer, in which was Sasol in Zalo, the NAF were their advisors. We advised Sasol on how they should package and structure the Sasol in Zalo share scheme. I was just mentioning that share. And then seven, our investor education campaign has reached over 20,000 black South Africans in the villages and townships. Today they know something meaningful about how to save and invest, personal financial discipline, how to invest in different asset classes like shares, but also on how to access the NAF funding and other funding options that are available from the other agencies of government. So we called this campaign says that we're taking the NAF to the villages and rural communities. Point eight, to date, the NAF entrepreneurship training and incubation program has provided business girls to more than 2,500 participants who attended 97 seminars countrywide from 2012 to date. Nine, our regional office network continues to shoulder the very high demand for funding from among black entrepreneurs and black people in general. And lastly, because our mentorship program, Honorable Chair, is succeeding in stabilizing our investees, over 1 billion rand has been collected in repayments. So the notion that says black people or black entrepreneurs will never honor their commitments is not 100% correct, because out of the 4 billion that went into the economy, 1 billion, remember we've been doing this for just about 9 years now, 1 billion rand of that funding has come back to the NAF. So it means those who have created sustainable businesses that were actually able to repay the monies that were owed to us by them. And Honorable Chair, one of the most important milestones of the NAF over the past few years has been the establishment of the Strategic Project Fund, which is one of the instruments through which the NAF is contributing to countries' efforts to grow black industrialists. I know that everybody is talking about the need for the country to create its black industrialists. So the message to the Honorable Members today is that the NAF is already engaged in this process. Albeit on a small scale, but we believe that we are actually leading this particular process. In order to give effect to government's injunction regarding the need for the countries to maximize job creation, very solid work has gained momentum in the Strategic Project Fund, which is a unit of the NAF that was established with a mandate to increase the participation of black people in early stage projects that are aligned to national government policies. So basically what we're trying to do here, when we're relying on what we call the demand-driven approach, where our black applicants and entrepreneurs would come with their business proposals to the NAS. We realized that what that was doing in a way was to locate black entrepreneurs in the periphery of the economy. So you would find that there would be a lot of new programs that were coming out of IPEP2, the new growth path, and so on. But it was very rare that you'd actually see the participation of black people in any of those sectors, the so-called new economy. So because black people would still be playing in, you know, they would come and apply for funding to buy trucks, which is still a good thing. They would be involved in the logistics sectors of the economy, and farm would be opening restaurants and saloons. So we thought the best way of locating black entrepreneurs firmly, you know, in the South African economy was by establishing this strategic project fund. And I will show you now what the fund has been doing. So the SPF has been created to seek competitive opportunity for the South African economy and the inclusion of black participation in opportunities at the outset of projects, as opposed to doing so during the equity closures of these projects. The other objectives of this important fund are to create new manufacturing and industrial capacity, create new jobs as opposed to replacement capital finance, invest in new fixed capital into economically depressed areas of poverty nodes of the country, to create an inclusive economy by increasing South African participation, increase South African export earning potential and reduce import dependency, and increase co-investment and linkage with foreign direct investors in South Africa. So when we do these projects, Honorable Chair, we use a sector-targeted approach where we would focus on sectors like the renewable energy, mineral beneficiation, agro-processing, ICT, infrastructure development, and tourism. Our thought leadership obligation, Honorable Members, has also compelled us to reflect on what exactly is a black industrialist. Because all of us are talking about these black industrialists, but have we really sat back and applied our minds as to who would actually qualify? And this was our attempt at providing that definition. So the way we look at it, Honorable Members, was to say that it is our belief as the NEF that a black industrialist would be an entrepreneur or enterprise that has a substantial equity or operational interest in the long-term ownership and control of a medium to large enterprise in a key sector of the economy as defined in ITEP 2, with a high job creation potential and making a meaningful contribution to growth and development. So this is moving us away from the passive investment programs that we're looking at in the past. So we're saying it has to be entrepreneurs who are operationally involved in those businesses. These black-owned companies may increase South Africa's export earning potential and reduce import dependency by growing the country's economic capacity through primary, which would be the retrieval and production of raw materials, secondary processing or beneficiation, or tertiary industries. As a patriotic corporate citizen, the black industrialist is motivated both by the quest for personal success and the sustainable growth of the South African and African economies, and pursues his or her endeavors with irreproachable integrity. In accordance with legislation and for the purpose of eligibility for funding from the National Employment Fund, a black person is an African, colored or Indian natural person who is a citizen of the Republic of South Africa by birth or by descent, as well as a natural person who acquired citizenship by naturalization prior to 27 April 1994. So this is our definition of a black industrialist. It was our first attempt, so I would like to hear the views of the honorable members.
I'm saying we are creating a petty bourgeoisie. Oh, God, in your son.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you, honorable members. So, honorable members, industrial projects typically undergo an extensive and rigorous development cycle prior to reaching a bankable stage, at which point they can be evaluated for commercial viability and funded by investors. Such investors can either be equity and or commercial funding institutions that would do this through the provision of debts, quasi-debts, or equity instruments for implementation. As illustrated graphically in this slide, honorable members, what happens over time with the progression of project development, the confidence in the potential viability of a business concept, and the value of the project will increase. So typically we go through these development stages of the project that I'm talking about. So the first thing we'll look at is what we call the scoping and concept, which is the initial stage of project development used to generate, refine, and shortlist ideas for further development. Section 2, where we look at the pre-feasibility studies, and this is the second stage of project development during which business models are developed during scoping phase and are assessed for commercial viability and are developed in more detail with qualifying assumptions and a project risk matrix drawn up to conclude the potential commercial viability of business concepts. 3, we look at the bankable feasibility study, which is the final project development stage, wherein the material project contracts are executed, minimizing or eliminating project implementation and viability and uncertainty in order to permit capital raising for project execution. Stage 4 is about the fund raising stage, which is reached when project execution capital is raised from equity investors. This would be your local and international investors or debt providers. Then you reach the financial close, which is the stage at which all project capital is raised potentially unconditionally in readiness to fund drawdown and project implementation, which will be subject to fulfillment of any of the CPs that will be included in these projects. So honorable members, the NES, the SPF, which is our strategic project fund, targets investing in this project as early as practically possible for 3 key reasons. Firstly, to achieve the lowest investment equity subscription or enterprise. So basically, Honorable Chair, what happens, I'm sure the Honorable Members would be aware that South Africa as a country has made huge investments into the renewable energy space. I'm using renewable, but it can be any of these sectors. I did the Met a few months ago. If you look at what has gone into the renewable energy space alone, as a country we have invested about 100 and something billion into the renewable energy space. So we are saying as the NES, so what are these constraints? What is stopping our black entrepreneurs from entering the space? Because this is new space, so you can't say as black people that you will then go and negotiate with a white company and negotiate 5%. It wouldn't make sense. Or you negotiate 10%. It wouldn't make sense because the renewable energy wave is only coming in now. So black people are also expected to lead some of these initiatives. So when we're talking to some of the black businesses, we realize that they lack all of, you know, the various stages that I was referring to, because even if you are involved in the renewable energy space, so usually these are very big projects. A lot of them are not worth less than R1 billion to set them up, but you need to invest what we call venture capital financing or seed financing during the early stages of your project development. So where will they get that money from? So which is why, even though the country has invested about 100 and something billion, you'd actually find that even in your renewable energy space, black people are sitting at about 10%, which is not sufficient. At least if we're saying they're sitting at 20 or 30%, it would be much better. So we are just highlighting some of the constraints that our black entrepreneurs are faced with and how the NEF has attempted to respond to some of those challenges that we're kicking up. So we're saying we also enter early in this project so that we can influence the equity or ownership structuring. So when we put these projects together with our entrepreneurs, you can then decide on the equity and ownership structure of the project, because you actually, you have the first mover advantage, both in terms of the equity participation and the pricing of your entry into this particular particular project. So when you are in early, you can even say this component must be given to a broad-based group. Women must also get maybe 10 or 20%. So it actually gives you that advantage of dictating the terms and conditions of a particular project. Thirdly, we come in, Honorable Chair, to secure equity to be warehoused on behalf of and for future distribution to broad-based BEE entities. So this portfolio that I'm referring to, honourable members, it's a pipeline that has about 20 investments at present. These investments are worth about 600 million. The 600 million is what has been dispersed so far, because the projects go through, you know, that development cycle that I had on that slide. So we have already invested about 610 million in the past 7 years, averaging about 85 million rands per annum, which has leveraged an additional 3.6 billion of external funding to date, and is expected to leverage a total of 30 billion rands when the portfolio of 20 projects reaches financial close. And this is a very important point, honourable members, because what we do as NEF, we just inject, you know, a little bit of funding into this project to unlock value. So in the 20 projects that I'm referring to, we have invested about 600 million rand, and that has leveraged 3.6 billion from other funders. So we syndicate our funding, we co-finance our investments with other local and international investors. But once the NEF, can you go back to the... So basically, Honorable Chair, you know, the last stage of project development, which is the green... can you show?
Yes, the last one.
The last one, on the right, yes.
Construction on the left.
Yes, but you have that bar, the yellow bar. So the yellow bar talks about the financial close. So once you have developed the project to a financial close level, at that stage, all the funders will be queuing up for equity participation in the project, because you have invested the little equity. Usually you would have invested about, you know, in the solar energy projects. How much would be just one solar energy project from our side, plus from the 20, 30 million?
Yeah, between
10 and 20 million. Yes. But when it reaches financial close, that 10 or 20 million will leverage an additional 500 million or 1 billion from the private sector. So it's a model, honorable members, that has worked. And if it can be applied across the board, can you imagine the multiplier effect that this model would actually have in the economy? Because even your foreign direct investors, when they come to South Africa, they say, so where are the projects? So they say you have fixed the macro economic issues, your fiscal policies, and I don't know what the minister will be saying today, your fiscal policies are looking good, your monetary policies are looking good, you've been resilient during the financial crisis and so on and so forth, but where are the bankable projects? So this is what the NEF is doing. So we are pleased, honourable members, to report that many of these projects are at an advanced stage, with 74% variously at financial close, construction, and operation and operation stages. And by the way, just in this regard, honourable members, we have started with the construction of hospitals. It's the hospital group that is well positioned to be the fourth largest healthcare group in South Africa. Because if you look at the healthcare sector, I know that there are other initiatives of government, but we needed to position some of the black entrepreneurs in some of the strategic sectors of the economy. So if you look at the healthcare sector in South Africa, about 76% of the healthcare sector is controlled by three companies. So what our investments through the participation that we're having with a group of black doctors, black surgeons, they came together, it's a broad-based grouping. They went to the Department of Health, they got licenses to construct new hospitals. So the NEF came in just to assist with the development stages of this project. We have invested, if I'm not mistaken, about 100 million in the project. Our 100 million has leveraged about 2.6 billion from the private sector. So sometimes we say the private sector is not willing to invest in companies that are owned by black entrepreneurs. Sometimes they don't invest because we don't have bankable projects. So it's a cash 22 situation. So the first hospital, the first one is going to be in Gauteng, there's another one in Bloemfontein, another one in
Spain,
and then another one in Spain. Honorable members, the NEF has been operationally active for 11 years now, since capitalization by government in 2004. And 8 years ago, in 2007, we began a determined and deliberate process of ensuring that the NEF services are rolled out across the country in its entirety. As a result, the NEF invested presence in Gauteng has come down from above 60% of total disbursed funds in 2006 to 50% by September 2014. This is a gap that was determined to continue working on. So basically, we were heavily weighted in Gauteng. So a lot of our investments were in Gauteng, and we took a deliberate effort of working with some of the provincial governments to increase our presence in the provinces. The point must be made, though, honourable members, that this is not as a result of a reduction of funding in Gauteng. This is a direct consequence of planned, targeted, and increased funding in the other 8 provinces, because they too are integral to South Africa's economy. Over 76% of the country's population resides collectively in the Northern Cape, the Northwest, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Free State, Eastern Cape, KZN, and the Western Cape. Over the past 8 years, the NEF has implemented a 10-point strategy to grow its footprint countrywide, and these measures include the following. From 2006 to date, the NEF has presented and exhibited in a growing number of local community workshops that were hosted by national, provincial, and municipal governments, as well as various business and civic stakeholders. Between 2007 and 2014, we visited over 100 villages, townships, and cities countrywide, amounting to 12 destinations per province, reached over 21,000 participants for the investor education campaign. And I will show you the results of some of these interventions just now. In 2007, the NEF Asonge Share Scheme attracted 87,000 investors countrywide with fair representation from each province. 47% of our MTN shares went to Gauteng, 16% went to KZN, 9% Western Cape, 7% Limpopo, 6% Northwest and Mpumalanga, 4% each in the Eastern Cape, Free State, and 1% in the Northern Cape. But each province had its allocation. So we would go to the province and say, if we look at the demographics of the country, you should be sitting as a province, you should be sitting at 15%. So it just depended on whether they were willing to, you know, take up the offer. But we worked with some of the committee members from the trade and trade and industry portfolio committee. So if the Northern Cape is sitting at 1%, it's not out of our willingness not to actually support the Northern Cape. They were just not willing to take up the that particular offer. As just outlined, the SPF, which is the Venture Capital Fund, has since 2007 been responsible for driving the NAF contribution to industrialization by increasing participation of black people in early stage projects, especially in the provinces and poverty zones. Since our Rural and Community Development Fund has been proactively sourcing transactions in rural areas in order to unlock underlying economic value. Every year we have continued to place adverts and news stories in local, regional, and national media countrywide. And when we launched the business plan and mentorship program, the NEF hosted community workshops in every province, raising awareness on the online solution for developing own business plans with financial projections. And here, this myth around business planning process, by the way, it doesn't just reside with your ordinary people on the street. Even your professionals sometimes would struggle just to put a business plan together. So what the NEF has done, we've come with what we call a business plan toolkit. Because if you say to somebody, I really like your idea, let's say you want to produce bottles or you want to produce water, you have actually identified a source of mineral water somewhere in the Western Cape or Eastern Cape, you would say as NEF, we really love the concept, but unfortunately because of our PFMA regulations, we can't fund the project unless you come with a comprehensive business plan to us on how you're going to, you know, centralize this business and so on and run it. So people sometimes will run away. So with the business plan toolkit, what it does is you talk about financial projections. Other people wouldn't even know what must go into a financial projection, when in fact it's very easy. So we've done it in some of our African languages now. So we say what a cash flow analysis is, and say cash flow, but we'll say it in Tswana, a balance sheet. People will think it must be some rocket science, when in fact it's very simple, and an income statement. So when you go into the business plan toolkit, it prompts you. So as you actually populate your spreadsheet, it asks you, so how many of these gadgets do you think you'll be able to produce on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, the costing of those things on a monthly basis. By the time you know it, you already have your revenue projections. But if I had said, give me your revenue projections, you wouldn't have known. But because it prompts you, it's very easy to follow and to use. And I would just encourage the honorable members to go into our website, because you also interact with your constituencies. So just play around with it. And if there are certain things that you don't understand, come back to us so that when you also engage, because we want to increase our presence everywhere we go. If there are certain things that you don't understand, I would be happy to send some of our colleagues to sit with you so that you can have a practical feel of what it is we are talking about. So we also had something called the ASU Sonke Lebyi campaign that was held over 2 years between 2009 and 2010. That saw the NEF, the DTI, and other partners reaching 4 destinations in each in each province. And Honorable Chair, this was for the public promotion of understanding of broad-based CEE, access to business funding and access to government and private sector procurement and enterprise development opportunities. From 2009, the NES started opening regional offices countrywide. Office space is presently being identified for the Northern Cape regional office. And the business skills training has been provided to over 2,500 beneficiaries who have attended 97 seminars from 2011 to date countrywide. While a lot has been done, honorable members, to narrow the gap in our geographic footprint, we accept that a lot more still needs to be accomplished in partnership with provincial governments, municipalities, traditional leaders, regional DFIs and international DFIs, local business chambers and entrepreneurs in order to bridge the economic divide. While these geographic disparities are largely as a result of an historical legacy, the quest for the democratization of the economy beholds us, all of us, to restore the economic citizenship of all South Africans who are excluded from the economic mainstream. A key objective, honorable members, in this regard is to match our regional investment presence with the provincial GDP dynamics. So we say, as a first step, we want to match the GDP dynamics at a provincial level or even exceed. So if you have a province that contributes about 9% to the GDP of the country, we're saying through our initiatives and the partnership with all of our stakeholders that I've just mentioned above, that our intention would be to even exceed that if these opportunities are presented to us. We have referred to STF as a key driver of the NAF investment in rural and poverty nodes. An example, honorable members, because we're talking STF, but let me talk about the practical implementation of these projects. An example is in the first stage where the NAF was a key financier in Mabele Fuels. That is our investment. Mabele Fuels, honorable members, is South Africa's first ever success story in the renewable energy space. The company intends to develop around 154 million liters per annum of fuel-grade bioethanol. The plant to be located in Bothaville in the Free State province will use grain sorghum as the feedstock. And this investment, honorable members, is now worth about 2.5 billion. But if it were not for our initial funding, these investors would not have had the opportunity to actually conceptualize and, you know, come up with the feasibility studies that were required. So in terms of because this program is driven by the Department of Energy, when they list their bioethanol projects, Mabele Fuels is number one on the minister's list. We are ready to start with the construction phase. The project is actually well positioned. The estimated numbers of jobs that would be created is around 636 direct and indirect.
So it's about 15,000. So when you look at the backward
integration, it's about 15,000 jobs, because you'll have your small scale farmers will be involved in the sorghum, the production of who'll be planting sorghum. And this sorghum obviously has to go through a particular manufacturing process. So it starts from your small-scale farmers, who are also part of the project, by the way. They also have, they will also have equity in this particular project. So if you look at the whole value chain that is associated with the project is well positioned to create about 15,000 jobs in the first state. So, Honorable Chair, if you talk to the premier in the first state, he knows about the project and the Minister of Energy, and we conceptualize it. Honorable members, the Rural and Community Development Fund has made important progress in reaching out across the length and breadth of the country. In this regard, agro-processing has proven a dynamic sector. In tourism, the NEF has funded a number of community-owned hotels and lodges, which are important for the local economy. So sometimes the rural communities will come to us when our guys go to the, when they do the investor education. So there was this one community, they said they had actually received the land through the Land Restitution Act. So they were sitting on this piece of land and they didn't know what to do with it. So what our guys did, obviously sometimes we work with other experts in the area, you know, just these retired engineers who are sitting at home with because they retire at 60. My view is that at 60 you must be active, so they'll come and work with us to actually go and identify some of the investment opportunities. So just to give you an example of a rural and community development initiative. In Limpopo, we had this community, so our guys went there and they realized that this community owned cattle. And the quality of milk that they were getting was very good, but they didn't know what to do with this milk. So it's their community. So what they then did was to form a cooperative in that particular village, which allowed all the villagers to actually participate in this community trust. And what then the trust did, the NEF went and negotiated with the likes of Pamela's, it was Glover, Pamela's, and those dairy companies to actually go and source their milk from that particular village. But all of these things for the rural communities, some of the projects are very exciting, but for a rural community to put a project of that nature, because it comes with a lot of specifications. So Pamela and Clover will say, when you get the milk, this is how it should be kept, and so on and so forth. So there are a lot of requirements on their side as well. So the NEF worked with the community to put this whole initiative together. A lot of things, even the feedstock, they are very prescriptive in terms of what type of feedstock, you know, should be used to actually get this quality of milk that is required. It's one of those exciting projects for us because there was nothing in that community. So for the first time, the community is now supplying Pamela's and Clover, and the NEF is continuously monitoring the investment. Another community had access to a piece of land. They didn't know what to do with it. NEF went, and they realized there was a lot of tourism activity in that area. So you see those four-by-fours going with the, what you call those things that they throw at the back. But it meant that there was no accommodation in the area. So that it's a four-star hotel. It's in a place called Jodini in northern, I'm not sure where to go. Northern KwaZulu-Natal. So they created this four-star hotel but the community owns the hotel now. It provided a lot of economic opportunities for the villagers and the community as well, because the whole value chain, everything that is required by the hotel, from your vegetables and other things, cleaning services, gardening, those are like, you know, your immediate economic opportunities that you create, but they also have an equity investment in the project. We also have started malls in the Eastern Cape, those malls in Nkumbu. We started a mall in Nkumbu, and what is good about the mall is that the community owns it as well. But we negotiated with the retailers like your Pick and Pay, and then that they must source some of their products from the local community. So we work very well with retailers like Pick and Pay and Woolworths. I have to say, even though they have not transformed at an ownership level, but when it comes to supplier, like supplier development, I think they've been very active in that particular space. I'll be done in 5 minutes, Chair. The NEF currently also has working relationships with 10 business incubation centers across the country. I won't go through all of that because we all know what incubation centers are. We have referred also to the importance of regional offices and the national impact and reach of the NEF investor education drive, and both of these are important cornerstones of our regional outreach strategy. Just on the empowerment dividend, honorable members, whilst the NEF places precedence on commercial viability, our mandate also focuses on softer measures in assessing applications for funding. So when an application comes to us, the things that will be on the lookout for, obviously we do want the project to be financially sustainable in the long term and commercially viable in the long term, but these are some of the development indicators that we'd also focus on. Obviously the transactions must comply with all the relevant laws, and you look at black management and operational involvement. We don't like passive equity structures. We want our black entrepreneurs to be involved in the project. We look at risk sharing by entrepreneurs. We look at the black women black women empowerment component. We look at community involvement, black ownership, and all of these things must comply, obviously, with the NEF product criteria, job creation, and the geographic location of the business. So it doesn't mean that in every project, you know, we must have these. So it depends. You can maybe achieve three of these, of these objectives in one project, but this is, in a way, it would also have a bearing on the pricing that would apply on the project. So if, for instance, you have a project that creates jobs, it has a community involvement, it's in one of the economically depressed areas in the country, your project can get prime minus two. So, but if it doesn't have any of these, then obviously our money is going to be expensive. So our money is dependent, or the pricing of the project is dependent on the developmental impact that that particular project will have in the economy. So this is what we call the empowerment dividend. And this is just a sector breakdown, just to show the honorable members where our money, to which sectors our money has gone. 14% has gone to construction and materials, and 9% has gone to manufacturing. If I can just mention a few, energy is at 7%. Another important milestone, which is something I have already spoken about, is that the NEF has been in cash collection. In this regard, over 1 billion has been collected cumulatively from loans dispersed across the country in black-owned and managed businesses. I don't know if the honorable members would be interested in listening to some of the challenges and impediments. I think we have about two slides there. We have spoken about the positives, but we wanted to just touch on some of the challenges that we experience as we as we actually do our work in the provinces. So I'll ask my colleague to reflect on this, some of the challenges.
Thank you, CEO. Probably just to really wrap up this presentation is that whilst we are working very well in the provinces, there are, however, administrative and bureaucratic impediments that are on the way, and this, unfortunately, at times delay, obstructs, and in the final analysis, some of them even end up stopping the good intended projects that we have funded in this area. And I just want to go through a few of them. I will not mention all. They are in your presentation. One of them, Honorable Chair, is the reluctance by the national and the provincial government departments to give the NEF direct session of the process of the contracts that we fund. We provide procurement finance as one of the products, especially to SMEs. Many of these come to us, they are actually insolvent, technically insolvent. Some of them have been sequestrated. Some of them are having challenges. But in their quest to be rehabilitated, they have got these opportunities. They come to the NEF, and we do not really look at some of the challenges they have, but we say, if you have got a strong contract awarded by a provincial government, the department must give us session of the process of this contract so that we can fund you. This will help you get rehabilitated as a business over time so that you are able to can get your house in order. The problem, Honorable Chair, is that many of the provincial departments are not willing to do that. This is the only security that we have. People are not able to provide down payment. The only security we have is the contract that is viable. And you are saying to them, can we at least have session of this? And in many times, it is not actually, you know, doable. I mean, we have got an incident in Gauteng where myself and my colleague funded a particular project for someone, you know, to execute a contract, agreed, and the next thing, they are just not able to give us this thing. And unfortunately, and I'm not saying all of them, some of our entrepreneurs end up when they see the color of money running away. And it is sad because then it ends up painting everybody the same way, in that when people come, you have to request some of these things. And those are just some of the things that we wanted to mention. The other one is rigid, you know, terms of contracts which do not allow for extension. We had a contract in the Western Cape where an entrepreneur has been given a contract to do waste removal. You know, your domestic, you know, waste removal. This particular contract is for 36 months. But due to the delays that were experienced, by the time the money is approved, you're left, let's say, with 30 months or less. For us to go to the city and say, kindly extend so that the repayment of that facility does not end up squeezing the entrepreneur so much, you know, of whatever that is required, at times we do not find the flexibility from those that provide, you know, the contract. Other thing is that at times entrepreneurs in their desperation end up signing contracts that are actually at times not viable. And when the negotiations happen, you find that the department, even though they see that indeed this is what is required, at times they are not, you know, in a position to actually budge. And the biggest one is, unfortunately, late payment. In the human settlements, you know, in transport, in public works, our people do not get paid on time. And this, unfortunately, says NEF continuously provides, you know, a moratorium and so on. We had one incident in Limpopo, where the Department of Agriculture promised to give this community day-old chicks feed and inoculation. The project is funded fully by the NEF. When they go and ask for the day-old chicks, all of a sudden they are not available. We have got a project in Northwest called Molamo, which we have included. Bakuluben tribe, given 1,000 hectares where they are supposed to plant. When we have started with this project and we intend gradually planting in a place where you had virgin land which has not been really tilled for 20 years, the next thing, community, the chief, they chucked out these people and all of a sudden we are back to square one. They were supposed to plant, you know, a sunflower, a maize, because these are seeds that you can plow where you do not have, you know, irrigation, they rely on rain. The Northwest Corporation was willing to give us off-take agreements. Unfortunately, these are some of the challenges. And now all of a sudden, this community, I mean the promoter, has actually been taken out of the Bakulubay. People want their land back. What do they want to do with it? They just want it back. And nothing is happening. The land is idle. You know, it's just left there, fallow. And just to add, this community were paid monthly rental by those that were actually using their land. Mm-hmm. to say we will give you so much rental a month. Some of the people were getting around 3,000 rands a month. All of a sudden, the land is taken. Nothing is happening. They had to relocate and go somewhere else. I think these are just a few of the, you know, again, the Ntozini, we are having challenges in actually being granted, you know, land lease agreements. Sometimes projects really, you know, delay forever. Pit Retief, we are having a project where just to get the water license. You know, another place in Hamasala, Limpopo, the community doing bricks there, where the cooperative has been formed, but just for them to get the water license, it took them 3 years to be given some of this. These are some of the challenges that we are saying, honorable members, be aware of them, that as much as we do the best that we do, unfortunately, these remain impediments, these remain really, you know, obstructions that unfortunately will forever delay us in executing some of the viable projects in this area. And some of the provincial governments, I must say, however, that they are cooperating. We continuously see grant funding coming in. We also need to be able to say, I think it is important for you to talk to the respective legislatures, the provincial government, to come up with clearly spelled out, you know, rules around how grants can be accessed. Because some of the projects will not be viable if you inject 100%, you know, of what we call repayable loan. You need some sort of seed capital in the form of government grant to make sure that these projects are viable over a period of time. Because when you put seed in the ground, you wait for rain to come. First year, no rain comes. Just when you're about to harvest, frost comes. And if you do not have some element of grant and you're having a repayable loan, unfortunately, it ends up making the project unviable. We maybe just check those
few about
Thank you. I think my colleague has already touched on something. Another one would be where we wait for licenses.
There are certain areas where projects require licenses, like petrol stations. So the delay that it takes, because sometimes you approve a project, but you wait for 4 or 5 months for that project to require one, a site license, and also an operating licenses, which means that there is a delay in that project taking off the ground. Now, I think one of the things that we would like to emphasize, especially when it comes to the provincial government, is the payment of suppliers. Because we've had a lot of businesses that went under because they were not paid on time. They did the work and the product was good, but because of the time delays that it takes for them to receive their payments, the project ends up being liquidated. Sometimes we extend moratoriums on our side where we give them breathing space and we do not collect on our loans, but also on their overhead side, if they don't get money, unfortunately, those businesses eventually become unviable. That is a huge problem that we are facing with. And also in terms of agreements that we have with some of the provinces that are not honored, where we have an arrangement. My colleague mentioned that when entrepreneurs see the color of money, sometimes they change and they take that money and they move it somewhere else. So we've had instances where entrepreneurs change bank accounts that we've agreed that a municipality will pay into. They go to the municipality to change that account without our consent. By the time we go back, money is gone. So those types of projects are unfortunately affecting how we do businesses, because we actually would like to create that working relationship with the provinces in doing projects. Franchising, another important example of issues that are affecting our entrepreneurs. We have a lot of franchises, especially some of those big franchises in the food industry that come into the country and they give people licenses to operate under their brands. And we fund these projects and they go and open up stores. But the minute that store becomes profitable, the very same franchisor that gave the license, they start to pick up on small things on the franchisor. We have an instance where a franchisee was late by a week in paying rent.
and that franchisor was kicked out of the store. That store was taken over by the franchisor and they ran it for themselves. So we are actually very against a situation where our people are used to go and test markets, because we find that they are used to go and test a particular market to see if it's going to work. The minute that is proven that it's profitable and they've used the funds that came from this franchisee, then the franchisor would go and take over that store. But if that project goes down, there's not much assistance that comes from the franchisor to try and assist them to ensure that they grow over time. Because part of our offering is mentorship. Because some of the projects that we find, unfortunately, they do not do well in the early stages. So we provide mentorship and turnaround support, and we patient capital to ensure that over time they eventually succeed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Papa whispered to me that we need to run, and quite a privilege. And then ask if he could raise his questions first. then that he will be followed by. Let's have his questions and then let's have them answered. Adopt the minutes while he's here. And then, because we still have like 45 minutes. Please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for honoring the request. As I say, you know, I'm usually until the end, but this is unfortunately quite urgent call. I would like to ask, how much of your long-term loans are still outstanding? Because you claim to collect your loans, however, the impairment provision trend to date is apparently only 20% from what I have, or statistics that I got. So I'd like to know, and then secondly, what is the write-offs to date? As I suppose all of us do watch the news and so on, so I'd like to know what the write-offs is at this moment of time in millions, and what are you doing about it? Because I must be quite honest, I listened to it and I don't see a real strategic plan to get the money back. And then, the third question, what happened in the forensic investigation that was launched about the 34 million? You opened Luminescence, the boutique in Hyde Park. I need to know how far that is and what happened to that. We're talking about another 34 million there. Then what happened to the 9.8 million loan to Mr. Nkanyiso Buthelezi after 3 years that not one cent has been repaid? I need to know how far you've gone with that, how much of that money has come in, and how many of these other investors are still hanging around that we don't know of. Because it seems to me that there are some business people, and I'm not making suggestions, there are cases, you know as well as I do, that these, I think at this moment running, investigations on personnel of your department that is giving out loans, where huge amount of loans, where this money has been misused and not for the real reasons for what we are sitting here for. Thank you.
Okay. Let's have quick responses.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I will share the other question on write-offs and the amount of loans that are still outstanding. But I just want to preface this. Chairperson, you know, we read a lot of stories in the newspapers. What we have not been told is that quite companies that are getting funding from our government entities are also losing billions of rand. So it's also very normal for the black-owned entities. So if you are a black-owned entity, we are not going to be immune to any of the macroeconomic, you know, crises that we have actually seen in this country and the financial crisis. The only difference is that we are black and we are not immune to those economic shocks that all the companies in this country have suffered. So in our case, yes, some of the companies we have funded have gone under. But what is good about it is that in one company you would have lost 10 million here. I'm not saying it's good to lose money. You lose 10 million here, 5 million here. But when a white company that is supported by a government-owned entity loses 1 billion in one transaction, I won't give names, but if the committee were to go back and actually do that research, they would actually see that 1 billion will go under in one company. It doesn't do any headlines. But if our small entities lose money here and there, then...
Excuse me, on a point of order. My question to you was not about other companies that's losing money. My question to you was specifically aimed at the questions that I've asked. So please, I would like you to answer my question and not about other companies that's losing money. I'm here representing this portfolio or this select committee to find out why the National Empowerment Fund has lost this money. Not about what white companies or black companies. It's about what we see here.
Okay.
So please, let's stick to the subject. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Okay.
I think in fairness to the CEO, we need to say that she said she wants to put it in a context.
Yeah.
And give us the background.
Sorry, Honourable Chair, but with due respect, my question, I do understand that other businesses are also making losses, and then you also get a lot that making big profits, which I can also give you names, which are making massive profits. But I need to know on the specifics that I was asking to you. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Okay, Chair, on the impairment level, I think our impairment level for last year was around 19%. 19% to be precise. So my colleagues will help me with the exact number that relates to the 19% figure. But Chair, we have also just done an analysis with an entity that was actually established during the apartheid era about 45 or 50 years ago. Was very much in line with, so it's not like ours is out of kilter with what is happening. There were some of the local DFIs and international DFIs. And then on the write-offs, I'll ask my colleagues to give me the number there. On the 34 million rand investigation that was done, I have to say, Chairperson, that unfortunately in this country, when you report about the good news, people don't read. I don't know how many times I've made reference to this matter that let's just forget this matter and move on. Firstly, we believe that it was a legitimate investment that we made because this woman has paid it off. I don't know how many press releases we have issued. She has paid this 34 million rand off. We got it all back to the NAF and we have issued a statement on that. On the 9 million rand that was given to Mr. Nkanyiso Buthelezi, Honorable Chair, this was a lie. This committee can send its auditors to the NEF. This was a big lie. There was a commitment to fund to the tune of 9 million rand. And by the way, Mr. Buthelezi qualified to actually get this funding because in terms of the definition of black people in South Africa, he is black. So he qualified like everybody else. The minister did that investigation. And he realized that everything was above board. The amount that was given to Mr. Nkanyiso Buthelezi was 200,000 rand. And by the way, Honorable Chair, he started this shipping company with 200,000 rand. And I have to say that it's something that we should be proud of because in the area where he's operating, there were no black players. He's doing extremely well, and he has repaid the 200,000 rand back to the NAF, which constitutes about maybe 0.00 something of our total funding. He issued a statement even on this matter, but people just choose not to listen sometimes. All these nyanis have been paid off. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. We're still looking at the exact numbers here because
But what I wanted to put into context, we mentioned in one of the slides that to date the NEF has approved 5.8 billion rand, of which 4.1 billion rand has been dispersed. Of that amount that has been dispersed, a billion rand has come back, which means about 3 billion rand is outstanding. But what we want to put on record is that of all the capital amounts that the NEF has dispersed, it gets it back. Where we make write off, it will be on the on interest. We did actually a study last year to see how we're doing in terms of our loans. The good thing is that we get our capital money back. But we mentioned in our presentation that one of the things that we look at when we're doing projects is the development impact, which we call the BEE dividend, which looks at the jobs that we create, at the geographical spread, the women that we empower. So we do not operate like a bank where we measure our returns in terms of how much interest that we've recovered from investment. But the one thing that we are always ensuring is that the capital that we put in the economy, it comes back to the NEF.
Okay.
Yeah.
The issue of the impairments, I think, just maybe for my colleagues, and I don't really need to be, you know, with respect to educating the honorable members, but provision, an impairment provision purely means this is what we have provided for, which was 19.9% in the 2013-14 financial year. The CEO mentioned something that one of the largest DFRs for two successive years were actually at 18.3%. This is the analysis that, you know, the CEO was making, and those are in the public domain. People are able to can look at them in terms of the numbers that have been mentioned. I think the write-offs, definitely we will make sure that we come back to that on the number, because what we do is that right at the end, when everything else that we have tried has failed, only then can we then go and say we will write that. And it becomes a very small amount in terms of the, you know, in terms of the current performance. I think as a DFI, that is at the forefront of development in this country. Considering that 90% plus of what we provide, Honorable Chair, is not in any way collateralized. People come to us with nothing. And I think that in us really being at a level of 19, once we endeavor to make sure that money comes back, I believe that we are actually, you know, making strides in bringing development in this country.
So, Dr. Cruz, what is 19% of 4 billion?
Chair, if I make, CEO, thank you for that. It's 867 million rand.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the impairment provision.
Yeah. But when you move, through your chair, when you move transactions to, when you make a provision on the transactions, it doesn't mean that all those transactions will fail. So it means that they could be, you know, experiencing some financial difficulties. Because sometimes you can provide, you know, this year, but 2 years later, that transaction is actually performing. So you reverse that particular provision amount that you would have included in your calculation.
We unfortunately have to look at questions from the other members as well. We have this problem all the time that when we need to, time catches up with us. Can I, before I give the other members a chance, say, Honorable Pabba, now you owe me one. You have to propose that we accept the minutes, and then Honorable Mokwena would be so kind, because he was the other member present, to express himself on the minutes then. Honorable Pabba, you so propose. You propose the acceptance of the minutes.
I accept the minutes as presented to us on the motion.
Thank you.
I second the acceptance of the minutes on condition that I see these minutes, they tend to give the perspective of the presentation, but they don't give the perspective of the questions that we also put forward. So if they could also be included in the answers, and you know, so it's an all-inclusive minutes-taking process. But I think
I hear you. It's going to be an arduous task, because you know how many questions we do have, and what we're trying to do, you see, even with the presentations, that we try and just give a summary of the presentation. With the presentation is different because we have the document.
Yeah.
But with the discussion, yeah.
I do think the questions are pertinent to the minute taking, because then it gives a feel of you know, even the presenters themselves can go back to those minutes and refer to some of the questions, because I think some of the questions that we asked are pretty important.
We will look at that. Let's just, before I take the next end, I've noted Honorable Suka, Honorable Lond. Is there another hand from any of the members? So it's only the two.
I okay. wanted to speak when Honorable Papa is here. Now my input will be useless when it's gone.
No, you speak to, you raise questions. You raise questions to the presentation and the chairperson. Can I just say to the delegation from NAF that I listened to some of the comments that you're making about the provinces. Let me just underline the fact that we are, as members in this select committee, from provinces. And therefore, we would be eager to take up with you any of the things that relates to provinces, but you can't ask me what's happening in the Eastern Cape, whereas Honorable Suka, who's from the Eastern Cape, would be able to help you with that. So don't be too anxious about that, but I'm hoping, therefore, Honorable Suka, that we'll do two things. You'll raise your question, but also in the opening remarks of their presentation, they indicated that this is their first presentation, and they do not know whether it covers everything. I had, for example, noticed the questions that were raised related to the finances of the NEF. So it would be good in other presentations, but to say to members here as well, if there's any other things that you think could help in improving on the presentation to meet our expectations, please feel free to express those as well. Honorable Suka, Honorable Lord.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Lito Stanley Suka from the Eastern Cape PE, member of the committee. Firstly, Chairperson, I appreciate the presentation that was given by the CFO, CEO. My apologies. Two distinct positions. The presentation was quite informative to me, especially for my constituents where I come from. Well, it's a bit, it's quite big, very huge. you know, it was from where I reside to where you have projects in the Eastern Cape, more than 500 kilometers. So it's quite huge. But my first comment, Chairperson, I think we as MPs and the government, we have to look, to relook the question of the curriculum. Our curriculum must respond to the outside world in terms of what is being raised here. certain key subjects must come to the fore so that they respond exactly to what we are talking about here. If we want to develop a nation that is at work through the entrepreneurs that the presenter made. So the question of curriculum should come to the second one.
The curriculum at school.
Exactly. Yeah. The second one, Chairperson, the marketing strategy of the DFI. I think some kind of there's room for improvement, rigorous as well, so that it reaches every corner of this country, what you are doing. Because if you want to take out your people from the poverty line, this is one vehicle to do that. But how you market it maybe we can share some ideas, because we come from different constituencies. So I think, in fact, I would also put the chance to invite them to my constituency, you know, either through a seminar and so on, to invite, to organize various sectors or groups, you know, just to be exposed to what has been presented here today. To me, it's very interesting. Serious minds are needed to get into the mainstream of the economy. So we would want to have your contact number so that when we are ready and you are ready, you must come down to our constituencies. I'm just thinking also aloud, the inland, the inland area, the small towns, and I'm taking the tune from the president's speech where he said you must revitalize those ghost towns and so on. You've got the little Karoo, those towns, Club Flats, Dancerville, Staglerville. It's almost retirement towns. There's no life and activity in that, in those areas. Willowmore, you know. So surely through your program, something can spring up. I know there's rural, but there's farm-oriented towns in South Africa that are just dormant. They survive through grants, you know, the old age grants, social grants, and so on. On the question of the recovery of funding, I'm not sure to what extent do you have that memorandum of understanding or that co-agreement with your clients up to a point where, because I'm taking this from when you are saying they change their addresses and so on, by the time you go to the bank there's no money because the person has already changed. Maybe there is a gap in that which needs to be tightened and so on. My last contribution, Chairperson. I think the DFI must also highlight us, tell us where are your gaps. Because look, we are policymakers, lawmakers. What are the constraints in the law wherein you'd want us to improve on that? So that we assist the process. Both the weakness of the law or the policies, but also to make it easier for our disadvantaged communities to get into the market through your vehicle. So that is my contribution as of now. Otherwise, yeah, I like also you be very transparent on the challenges that you had in the last two slides. I'm not going to go into the other, those are huge challenges when I'm looking at them. Quite huge. For some entities, will just give three or four, but when you go to town. So I'm saying I'm very happy about that. Let alone, I did not go to the core in terms of the other questions that I may raise. I will raise them in the second round. I will not be so nice. Thank you.
Thank you for being nice, Honorable Suka. Can I just ask on the question of marketing that has been raised by him as well? The Secretary informed me that you have a store somewhere here.
Yes.
So please, on that marketing and to get contact details, other than knowing you, you would want to get the contact details of particular people, like the engineer. So Honorable Suka, there are the pamphlets outside. Please, members, let us make it worth the effort of them leaving each other with us. Honorable Lond, and then Honorable Mokwena.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, the NAF definitely has a critically important role to play in our country and in uplifting our country. That is the first thing that we all acknowledge. The difficult thing for us as politicians to hold you accountable is when things don't go well. And I'm not going to go delve into that because I'm sure there's a lot of other people that do that. But you need to keep your side clean in order for us to boost the funding. That's definitely a shortage. And if you don't keep your side clean, we cannot support you because then you don't spend the money wisely that gets sent to you. I mean, be open, be accountable. I mean, but that's just a short intro. I mean, what we need to do, and this is what the committee from our side need to do, is to make sure that the commitment that was given for adequate funding, I think it was in 2004, there was a commitment to provide over 10 billion or 10 billion rand over a 5-year period. Nothing came of that. So that is what we as a committee must actually find out what what happened with that. Okay, but we cannot really push for that when there's every now and then these allegations popping up that the money that's allocated to you is not being spent well. I mean, the CEO, you've got an important job, you're earning, I think, much more than the president even, so you need to make sure that this thing works.
Chairperson. Chair. Let's not go that overboard, because that's too personal. Let's talk about, we can't say you earn more than the president. I mean, she's there on a particular mandate, and let's stick to that mandate. We can't compare that with the president. Otherwise, it does not sit very well. I'm not going to elaborate on that.
I'll rephrase that. The officials is well paid to make sure that this department works properly. And if it doesn't work properly, then we need to hold you accountable. Now, we should, as a committee, make sure that you get better funding. Okay, we should also look at how the NEF is classified. And if you find ways, because none of that was really raised, but maybe we need to reclassify the NEF. And I know my colleagues in the National Assembly have also raised this, and I want to find out what the progress has been in this. Reclassify the NEF under the Public Finance Management Act as to empower you to have borrowing rights to do the work. Maybe even list yourself as a venture capital fund. I don't have all of that detail, but this has been submitted to you in the past. I'm sure you are aware of this. It was written to the minister as well. And firstly, I want to find out, are you aware of the proposals that came in? And if not, then we'll have to submit it again. And if you are aware of all the proposals that were submitted, what is the progress in terms of that? But bottom line, I really, really hope that you make the success and the inroads of why you were put there, and we will support it, but please make sure that the money that gets allocated to you are used responsibly and wisely.
Thank you very much. I think it's important for me as chair to say that the status of the NEF is not determined by these people sitting here. Therefore, if they choose not to answer that, it's fine. If you could answer it, it's also fine. Honorable... Sorry, I'm looking behind you. Honorable Mokoena, your question, please.
Thank you, Chair. I had quite a few questions, because, you know, black empowerment for me is quite close to my heart, so quite a few issues that, but let me start by saying that, one, I wish, because this is the first presentation, I felt it was too over-encompassing, you know, you tried to cover too much ground, and I think we need now for you to come back and do specifics, provincial, sectoral, all of those things, so that we can then hone in on specific issues of the NEF. That's one. Two, I forgot your name. That's right. Yes, you said that you mentioned the challenges. Some of them that you get from the provinces and so on and so forth. I wish we could have more interaction in terms of those, so that we could intervene where we can. Because I think that kind of interaction would help the NEF to do what it's supposed to do. Thirdly, purely a philosophical issue, you know, I think the approach that we have in this country is that, and the Minister of
the minister in the presidency said in the beginning of this year that we're trying to create a bourgeoisie, a black bourgeoisie. And I think that for me is the beginning of our problems in trying to create a certain class of people, the comprador bourgeoisie, so to speak. The approach for me, a better approach for me, would be to create jobs. You know, that for me, that would be the key thing. And there's a difference, because when you create a black bourgeoisie, you concentrate on a few people who come to you, and you empower them. And then you have, as a by the way, a linkage to job creation and so on and so forth. Whereas, if we were to create jobs, the NDP, which we are highly opposed to the NDP, but the NDP speaks about the creation of a massive industrialization.
And I think you should help the members when you say we, because they don't know us.
Oh, okay. Now, it doesn't matter. Let me say me. Let me say I. I have a problem with the NDP. But the NDP speaks of massive industrialization. Massive industrialization in this context is the creation of jobs for 18 million people. Or it's less, I think it's 12. Right? And the approach that we seem to have with the NEF and IDC and all of those is creating these 80,000 jobs and 12,000 here, 300 here, and so on and so forth. And it's not addressing the big, massive industrialization which needs to create these 12 million jobs. And so the role of cooperatives for me becomes crucial, that we empower communities, that we empower whole groups of people, and not, you know, two, three who come with business plans. And I understand that is your mandate, and it falls under the Act, and this is what you have to go with. I just wish the philosophy was different. I just wish it was more sort of mass-based instead of empowerment. And like I said, it's a philosophical thing, and you don't have to answer to that, quite frankly. Then, specific questions, I'll ask two or three out of the ones that I had.
Can I ask you to be brief?
I'll be brief. That's why I'm just adding two more. You said that you needed 2.6 trillion, I think you said. The entire GDP, you said, would need 2.6 trillion. But how much then do we need to capitalize that to get to that 2.6 or whatever the percentage was? What is it that as a country that we would need to put in to get to that stage? That's one. And then two, I come from the media industry, if anyone didn't know. And I saw that, and there might be, Generations was 12 years ago. And there might be a conflict of interest in this question. But I see in Long, you capitalized, what, 50 million you said to Long Walk to Freedom. And it says here that it will create 12,000 jobs. Have you made an audit of that, and did you create the 12,000 jobs, and where did they come from, and all of those things? Because, you know, these numbers sometimes, we just say that, I don't think there's any television or film project in this country that has created 12,000 jobs. Thank you very much.
I'm under pressure, yeah. Three members want to speak, and one member wants to leave at 12. Will you allow me, for the sake of equity, that I would rather give over to the NEF now to respond, and then come back for more questions? Will I be allowed to do that? Please, whatever you want.
I just want to make something clear.
because I think my colleague next to me pointed it out to me now. I do not have a problem with any person earning good money as long as it is delivered in the institution that's running underneath. So that's not my problem. My comment was on the NEF needs to function properly. And if the NEF doesn't function properly, then that is where my problem comes in with that.
Thank you. Now I'm going to accept how the House leads me, Honourable Jimunia.
So in the interest of time, and we've got the budget at 2, I wanted to suggest that we throw all the questions, and when they answer, they answer it once, and we then close, and we really are going to need another meeting with them from the look of things.
Okay. I see that we are shaking our head there. So let's say that we then agree we'll try and conclude our business by 12:15. On my watch, it's now 11:50. Are we agreed on that? Okay, because I was working towards 12:00. Let us work then towards 12:15. Honourable Jimunia has a question, and then Honourable Vauda.
I have comments on the question, Chair. You know, in this country, the economic dynamics are such that it is virtually impossible to address yourself to the question of economic transformation without referring to black or white. I wanted to make the statement when Honorable Faba was here. Because ours is a nation that is characterized by two nations, one white and rich and one black and poor. So this dynamic can never be ignored when we always address ourselves to economic transformation in this country. So I really find it so unacceptable on the part of Honorable Vauda to attack the CEO when he Faba. Sorry, Doctor. My apologies sometimes.
By the way, we are friends.
The second point, Chair, I want to make is that it would have been very easy for me to comprehend the report when I was reading it against the set plan of the entity, because I would then understand what are strategic outputs as per the plan of the entity and what the report says as against that strategic plan, if we can be benefited with that. My observation out of the presentation is that the rich provinces are getting the lion's share as opposed to the poor ones. What is the theory or the thesis behind this? Can't we turn around? For the first time, I want to agree with Honorable Mukwena that this economic transformation need to be revolutionary. Revolutionary in the sense that it must be massive. And the masses of our country, of our people, are in rural areas, the poor provinces.
You're
I don't know, but maybe you've got a theory behind it. Your role or your activism in the IGR, your intergovernmental relations with provinces and local municipalities, how far does it go? Those are my three inputs.
So it's IGR.
Yes.
Are they cooperating with IGR?
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Honourable Vauda?
The Honourable Timonier is speaking like a fighter, so I won't be doing much talking today. I just want to comment very briefly on the issue of the salaries. It's irrelevant what people are earning. Once a person has taken a job, he should do that job 110%, irrespective of what a person is earning. And I'm sure that everybody around, or everybody in this house, or in the room at the moment, will agree with me with that. Once people take up a job, let's do it 110%. And I think that will put in perspective what we are speaking about. I've got other issues, but it's fine. I think we are covered on most of them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Vauda. Honorable Ditalia?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was not intending to speak today because as I was listening to the presentation, I could hear that they are really trying so hard to make sure that they cover all the corners. But if a member is raising a point that people are earning, they must work. I think we must also make an introspection on ourselves. Because if we know that we are here representing the people, we work, and at the month end, we earn. We need to be here early, all of us, including Dr. Voda, because that's part of earning. So if ever we don't have questions, I think it's better to keep quiet than to attack the people. Honorable Voda, I know I'm addressing you through the chair as a man who prays for all the departments. So if ever you see a loophole, you can pray for them so that they do their job. But yeah, Salam, that's what. Let's usually say it. But then I want to let me also say, I heard you, Mama, talking about Mabele making fuel. There's an area in Limpopo where the soil is rich in producing moringa. So maybe I'll talk to you after this. But anyhow, I'm happy all the media, radio people in the rural areas, they're being informed, they know everything about this entity. So I'm happy. I don't have questions. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, Honorable Mokwena says he's going to pinch me.
Please.
So it's not a question. One of the things that China discovered that the two things that they needed for them to industrialize as much as they did was one, land and two, sea. And I think you know, in the context of the world today, I would add plastic.
My apologies, because this honorable member, you know, the questions that you are raising are actually very critical, and I do want to respond to him before he leaves. So it's a point of order, because you can't raise such important issues and then don't give me the opportunity to respond.
Okay, Chair, I will wait my 5 minutes more, and then I will have to run as agreed 12 o'clock. Sorry, I just said to the Chair, if we're going to sit for 12:15, I'm already late. Oh. But if we finish at 12 with mine, then I will be fine.
We do appreciate that we are under a bit of pressure today. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Honourable Lond, and thank you, CEO. Respond to Honourable Lond first, so that we can then allow him to leave in peace.
Thanks once again, Honourable Chair. I do want to respond to Honourable Lond's issue, the way you prefaced your question. When I started my presentation, Honourable Chair, I was actually saying that the NEF, including myself, that we actually have an uncompromising commitment to integrity and good corporate governance. This August House can actually send top lawyers in the country, like they did, the other honorable member was referring to the investigation on that transition. We came here to Parliament, it was full house, to actually explain the strategic rationale of making that investment. That investment has been paid off. But unfortunately, for us, Honorable Chair, these things, you know, will just linger on, because people, I remember there was one journalist who once asked me, are you sure you are dealing with so much money and you have never stolen a cent? I don't steal. It's not in my nature. I don't steal. Corporate governance issues. The minister does it all the time. Our auditors, previously we used to have Pricewaterhouse. There was Deloitte & Touche, where they would come. In fact, Deloitte & Touche, when they came to visit us, Honorable Chair, they were saying they've done quite a number of these investigations in the past. You can also ask them to come here, but they've never dealt with an entity that is so clean. So I just wanted to flag this issue, because we always look forward to come and engage with the honorable members. But sometimes you come here, it's like you are being tried in a court of law, you answer issues that were dealt with many months ago. And I just ask myself, so how many times are we going to be going back to this door that we opened for this lady? I actually don't know. So before you leave, I just wanted to say to you that you are saying make sure that you do everything in accordance with the rules and just come and look at our corporate governance issues. Not just for me, for my colleagues and everybody else. It would be extremely difficult for anybody because of the type of corporate governance structures that we have to even think about stealing money at any, if they wouldn't even know where to start. So you are saying, okay, there are all these issues that you would, you know, like to assist us with on how we can raise additional funding. I thought that was constructive, and that's the kind of engagement that I would like to have with the honourable members. We have actually shared this information. The DA colleagues came to the NEF. They had requested a meeting with us. We sat with them for something like 2 hours, taking them through all the specific details that they were worried about. If you want to engage us, if you happen to be in Johannesburg, we have an open door policy at NEF. Just pop in at any time, give us a call. I want to engage us, like we did with the other honorable members from, they're from the DA, but they serve on the trade and industry portfolio committee. So we've dealt with the classification issues. We also shared that information with them. And then on the, also you're talking about what types of proposals you should be looking at going forward. So we're very, would be very happy to engage with yourself. So thanks for that contribution. So can I then deal with the other questions? I think Honorable Suka,
hello, Mama.
You raised quite a number of issues, and I think it was very constructive. And these are the kinds of robust, you know, issues that you'd like to engage. You know, we really, when we come here, we're very excited, and we hold this committee in high regard. So we don't want to be dealing with issues where we're going to be, you know, we're not saying everything that we're doing is 100% correct, and this is the kind of guidance and positive criticism that we're looking for. So I don't want to go through everything else that you have raised, but we would like to sit with you. That's what we do with some of the members from the Trading Industry Portfolio Committee. They will say, I have an investment in this area. It's rural people. They don't have all the information. CEO, please come to Parliament. I want to introduce you to these people. We are very happy and open to do that. So you're saying on the recovery of funding, Nzi, our legal advisor will deal with that. And you're saying what are the constraints with respect to the implementation of BEE? We can spend the whole day because this is the area we operate within. You know, Honorable Chair, a lot of people will actually raise issues around the NEF, and they will forget that when I joined the NEF, the previous minister had employed two CEOs. And by the way, I was not employed by this government in my current position. That's contrary to other people's beliefs. I was employed by the then government. So the minister who was Minister Alec Ewin at the time had employed two CEOs who were men. When I joined, it was when the government was saying, do we close the NEF down? What are we doing? We actually came in with the support from my team, and we've turned that organization around. And it's something, you know, sometimes people will want to pull you down, but it's something that we're very proud about. So if you talk to the chairperson of the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee, she will tell you that when we came in, the previous two CEOs who were men had only done about 8 or 9 transactions that were worth about 27 million. We have grown the portfolio of the NEF to 6 billion rand, which is a massive achievement as far as we are concerned because we've only been around for 10 years. Yes, I do agree that we're looking at this massive rollout and huge industrialization. It's a philosophical issue because even your white-owned businesses are struggling in the manufacturing sectors of the economy. So why would you then want to push black-owned? Because remember, we are dealing with an exclusion that happened over more than 100 years, where black people were not given the opportunity to participate. So allow black enterprises to start, even in the services-related industry. You can push the industrialization. This is what we're doing. Remember, I was talking about those 20 projects. This is what we're trying to do, to slowly move them towards the manufacturing side of the economy. But the smaller ones, the guy from Soweto who wants to buy his 5 trucks, why not let him, you know, run his 5 trucks and be involved in the logistics? And also, who says, because South Africa has been struggling with the manufacturing sector, but look at the services, look at retail, I'm sure you saw the numbers, what drove the latest GDP numbers. It's your retail sector in South Africa. You see what I mean? So you can't say, don't get involved in retail because we're pushing industrialization. Let them participate in retail. But maybe they must start with the manufacturing side and then slowly move towards job creation. That's what everybody is pushing for. They're saying bourgeoisie, the creation of bourgeoisie versus job creation. For me, the two, Honorable Chair, are not mutually exclusive. The Oppenheimers started their ventures. They've created massive jobs for this economy. They are part of the bourgeoisie. So if we really want to protect our democracy, there's nothing wrong in having 10 Oppenheimers who are black. I'm just saying it's a philosophical, as you correctly pointed out, because you can't say you'll be creating these black industrialists, but you don't want them to be rich. They will be rich by definition, but they will create jobs as well. You know, that's why if you look at the suite of projects and products that we've developed, they create jobs. They are looking at, you know, improving the economic conditions of people who live in the poverty node, and they will create, you know, rich people. I don't think there's anything we can. So you're saying 2.6 trillion. So how much do we need? I think initially, as the NEF, because remember, we're talking about 2.6 trillion, but we're not the only players. So we're the only entity that was set up with the exclusive mandate of driving the implementation of BEE in the economy. There are others. Remember, you want to be the catalyst. Once we are in, like you saw with those projects, we go, we raise money from the private sector, but there has to be projects. So I would say as NEF, would need about an additional 10 billion going forward. Not all of it must come in 1 year, but I'm just saying if we could get the 10 billion, then it would leverage, you know, additional funding from other funders. But obviously, you'd expect your DBSA, the IDCs of this world to also play a role. On the long walk to freedom, I will hand that over to our media and marketing and advertising a colleague here, but it was a real honor for us as NEF to have been, you know, the drivers of the implementation of, I mean, I know that I'm a bit conflicted on this one, but, you know, we are very excited about the opportunity of, I know. And then, Honorable,
He's just gone to the loo. Do you want to do the next one and I'll come back in?
Okay, and then Honorable Boda said the person must do it, that if you are given this responsibility, you must do it 100%. Not just 100%. I believe, until I'm proven wrong, that we have actually excelled as NEF. We actually believe that our model should be replicated in other, you know, sectors of the economy, in other, you know, provincial departments. So I want somebody who will actually come and tell us that even though we are still relatively small as compared to entities that were created during the apartheid era, if we are given the kinds of resources that we need, that 10 years from now we could potentially become the same size as or even half, 50% of what some of these of those entities have achieved over more than 50 or 60 years. So I believe that we are one of, I know that we're talking about ourselves, but we have to say this thing. Usually we're very modest, but when we're asked the question, we'll stand in front of any judge and tell them that we have actually excelled in terms of what we're trying to do. And by the way, Honorable Chair, if you look at the caliber of individuals that you need at NEF, most of them are, maybe 70% of them are investment bankers. If you are dealing with multi-billion rand projects, you will not say just because they are working for the NEF, so you don't need the expertise, the track record, you don't need the qualifications. You have to be, because you engage, let's say you are working on a project, you have to engage with professionals from the IDC. So this lady, the CA, is from the IDC, Strax is from the IDC, Z came from Cliff Decker, so you don't say, well, because you are the NEF lawyer, therefore you must not be qualified. Which is why, you know, our this thing, remuneration policy has to be in line with that of our peers. Obviously not exactly, you know, same level, maybe 60%. But what it means is that if you leave NEF, where do you go? Who are these people who are always knocking on our doors saying, can you come and join our entity? It's our peers, you know, who would say, I want you, Z, to come and join Investec or IDC. So, or Kakalana. So it's the same caliber of individuals. They have the same track record. Highly qualified, a lot of you have actually done the investigation on our qualifications as well. So I'm sure those universities are asking themselves, why are these people always investigated? So we are highly, highly qualified. And then I'd just like to say to Honorable Dikhalis, thanks for your comments. We're happy to sit with you after this presentation so that you can take us through the project that you were referring to. Then somebody, one of the honorable members was saying, why is there a skewed investment philosophy in, especially in the provinces that, you know, Gauteng still benefiting your richer provinces are still getting more than the poor ones. We're asking the honorable members, especially, you know, the honorable chair was telling us that you know, this is a committee of parliament that is focusing on provincial development. If we see a project like the one we are dealing with in the Free State that is located in the poverty nodes of the country, we run. But we need help from the provinces because if they are not able to, remember we only have about 170 employees. 170 employees servicing the whole country. When we go to the provinces, they'll be having thousands of these employees. So what we'll be saying to their employees is that just give us projects, just lead us in terms of identifying the investment opportunities. Nobody would say no to that. We also want to invest in our best interests in NEF as well. So for as long as the provinces and the local DFIs are not actively involved in driving development in the provinces, it becomes extremely difficult for us to do it on our own with 160 employees. You can't develop the whole country. Those are the resources we have, but there are those provinces who are willing to actually partner with the NEF and the local DFIs, but others are just not interested, Honorable Chair. I think there were two questions for my colleagues and then we'll be done. Thank you.
Honorable Dimuni is back. You answered the one about the provinces, which was your last comment.
Well, in the relations with the impact of the local, we also have relationships with the local DFIs.
but when we're going through those challenges, that is the two slides, what I would like to say about the provincial DFIs is that they don't want to assume a higher level of risk. You know, when you fund a project, you look for different types of funding instruments, senior debt and equity. So equity is more risky because you don't get your money quickly. So what we have observed with the local DFIs is that nobody wants to provide. You remember we were talking about seed capital, venture capital, and equity financing. They don't want to provide equity financing. In fact, it's written down as a policy. You don't provide equity financing. But if the local DFIs don't provide that, who will? Because we also have like a small pie that we are looking at. So, but we are working with them. Some of them are working very well with the NEF, like the Department of Economic Development in Limpopo work very well with us. The Eastern Cape and KZN, I would say to a certain extent, the Western Cape as well.
Just before you go, can I prepare you, Honorable Suka, to just mention the different departments in the other select committee that these very same members are sitting on that you are chairing, just so that our colleagues here from NAF has that understanding as well about the possibilities that exist in our ongoing working relationships. Just the names of the departments.
Oh. But before you do that, I thought you, like myself, may have to think through that.
So I wanted to allow them to respond first and then come to you as a concluding point.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of the bank accounts and the NEF processes, just to explain how this works is that when we fund a project whereby it's got a contract from, let's say, a municipality, what we do, we would actually agree with that entrepreneur that they need to open a bank account with a specific bank. And someone from the NEF would become a joint signatory to that account. We've got a team that releases payments on a daily basis and assists clients with bookkeeping services. Now, the agreement with the municipality is that all payments in relation to that project will go into that bank account. But what happens is that clients being clients, they go and open a bank account with a separate bank and they go to that municipality and say, please change the bank account arrangement I have with the NEF, make payments to this bank account. Unbeknown to us, monies are being diverted into a separate arrangement. So in terms of the processes on our side, we try to tighten it as possible. But unfortunately, in certain instances, we do need cooperation by the municipalities and other stakeholders to make sure that entrepreneurs, they don't go to them on the side to go and breach those arrangements. I think that's the challenge, that the point we were making there when we were talking about bank accounts. And then my colleague will take the question about long walk to freedom. But I think before he comes in, on long walk to freedom, we did when we looked at the transaction, it was a suite of transactions that we looked at around the same time. It was that one, long walk to freedom, it was a movie called Winnie, and another one called the Million Palace. So I think that was the context in which we were looking at when we were looking at the jobs there. But I think my question, my colleague has got a specific answer to that.
Well, indeed, we were guided by the producers of the movie Long Walk to Freedom. So over a two-year period, if you look at the various outputs in terms of carpentry, in terms of extras, and the various other competencies relevant to the production of the movie, that indeed the value chain would impact. And of course, these are not permanent jobs. The nature of the industry has important to know, besides that these are short-term job opportunity. But there were a number of other spin-offs that came out in terms of skills transfer and process capture. And so, apart from the fact that this was a celebration of an icon, the preservation is a very important part of our history, to a number of other elements that we are there, we have to look at in terms of, you know, all of these job creation opportunities, the skills transfer opportunities, and the rest. So, yes, those are some of the compelling you know, elements why we have been funded at the level of degree. Thank you. And I think there was a comment also with regard to marketing and communications. We're running a campaign, you know, at present, where politicians are focusing on five key provinces: the Northern Cape, the Northwest Province, the Bokom Mpumalanga, the Free State, and in fact the sixth being the Eastern Cape. But of course, you know, we were continuously looking at how far we can stretch with our marketing and communication outreach to impact our reach across the country.
I think maybe just to answer to Honorable Mokoena about the issue of cooperatives. We actually have a slide, page 22, where we wanted to just demonstrate the role that we play in the rural areas in ensuring that we create cooperatives that, you know, even though the bills, you see them like that, you are having members that can range from around 5, you know, in certain areas to about, you know, 10,000. In actual fact, if you look at Jozini Tiger Lodge, you're looking at a community where around 22,000 of members around that project today are shareholders in that project because of the cooperative structure and the community trust that we have created. We have got a whole lot of examples of what is it that we actually do in this area in making sure that we become as broad-based as one can ever be. And these are just some of the projects that we have done in these regions, starting from, you know, Limpopo, LA, Crushers, Mohali, Hamadrala, then you go to, you know, Mpumalanga and Ndusi Dairy. You're talking of the bus plants where people were owning land, you know, given by one of the forestry companies. Today they have beneficiating some of those projects. Orange Farm, you know, in the southern part, where a community in Orange Farm today are actually owners of a mall. That has just been launched in December. The statistics were saying that more than 1 million foot, you know, traffic were actually going through that particular mall, and 10% of that investment belongs to the community. I mean, we can go on and on and on about such things. So those are the examples of some of the projects that we are doing where we partner with communities, Bahasa Bahafela, Bagwena Bamokopa. You can go on and on and on.
Thank you very much. I'm pressurized, but I wanted to Honorable Sukaya is chairing the Select Committee on Economic and Business Affairs, and all of us members of this committee, because of our numbers in the NCLP, are also serving on that Select Committee. So I just thought that, because when Honorable Mtimunye raised the question about the IGR, is our commitment to be an activist parliament in this administration, we will take you up on your challenge that we need to look at how we can work much closer with each other to the benefit of the people that we're serving across the country. And I thought it might be helpful that he just shares with us which are the other departments that are reporting to us.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Within a minute, we are, these departments that are reporting to us, there are about 7, 8. Among them is the economic development, small business and cooperative, the Department of Public Works, Department of Labor, Department of Transport, the Department of Energy, you know, all those departments, including your two departments that are reporting to you. So it makes it up to 9. So we're having quite a, so the economic cluster is with us here, seated. That's why sometimes we would want to overlap our questions, because it's a very dynamic and a diverse committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We want to say to the colleagues from NAF that we appreciate very much the opportunity that we've had to engage with you. I want to just emphasize two points. The one is the point on marketing that has been raised. We need to request you to look at how exactly, and when you report to us again, tell us what you have done in terms of marketing. I mean, many of us look at these programs, these are our heroes. And you look at it and you say, but South Africa is a wonderful country to be in. And how many of those heroes are actually reflecting that they are being supported by the NAF? We are directly, as has been raised by Honorable Dikgale, very often, because we have constituency offices, and people come to us and they say, this is what we need to do, can you help us? So, that would help with the marketing as well. Then, on a lighter note, I wanted to just say that there's this friend of mine who's a priest, an Afrikaner from the Free State, who is black. And he put on his Facebook profile the other day the extract from the Mail and Guardian on the title, Six Things White People Have That Black People Don't. It's a very interesting article to read, because some of us in this meeting, when you at the offset emphasize black entrepreneurs, black empowerment, black people, black beneficiaries, you could sense that it's set uncomfortably. But as has been said by one of the members here, it is a reality of our South African society. We must be cognizant of that reality as we deal with it. And I thought that I will mention this article because it could be helpful to many of the other people as well to read. What? The title is Six Things White People Have That Black People Don't.
What are those that you don't have?
Let me give you an example of two. They say that if you're born in a white family, you automatically inherit. Your father will most probably have had a piece of land somewhere that you can inherit. If you're born in a black family, you have to start by buying yourself a house. You come from a white family, you would have most probably have had a bursary. Come from a black family, the first thing that you have to do is to buy a car, pay for your car, and send money home to your mother who is living in an impoverished community. You can't think of getting money from your parents. And Honorable Mokwena, those are part of the dynamics that we're looking at as well. When we talk about the wealth creation, I think it's important that we engage with each other frankly on these issues. And your presentation today has stimulated that in our hearts and in our minds, and we thank you very, very much. You are free to go to the store and look at the document.
I do have all that is where in the white. I am a farm. I inherit something. I'm just joking. Yo.
Colleague, but we are not all here. But let me raise it with you now. Let's raise it. Let's do a round robin on the game.
They won't go. None is good. I didn't get it.
So
you can check. No. I believe you.
Long. Okay.
You saw
Thank you.
We will speak to honorable.
the court. It's two for Saturday and two for Sunday. All right. So you decide which one is fine. You can have one, he has one. Then there's still two left. The Hale, you take one. No, no. We don't give it to the legal party.
Okay.
We give it to people. No, no, all of us can. I would have loved to go, but I'm not going to be. Anything can be done.
So, you are from.
Don't advertise it.
Okay. We just say that I have done it. Very wonderful. You have to work on the motion if you don't because you
No.
So then you go one day and he goes the other. Let me just read it.
I think one thing is for two people. Yeah. You can take a partner with
no, that's no. That's how I understood.
Yeah.
But now he Kubeka is confusing me. That's how I understood it. The way that Martin is.
Yeah, we can have to tend to work alone then.
Then you can send them both.
What do you see?
Two couples. You know what a couple is. People must motivate to me why they
did
but do it as soon as possible so that you doesn't throw out your money. I'm not going to give you money.
Oh.
We let you look up. I am told that the